Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. I think this is 223, Highway Diary episode 223 with Colin Anderson. Is that right?
Armstrong. Is this Eric gonna fuck with that?
No, the air is going down. Armstrong. Colin Armstrong. What a dick I am. You know, I call Gordon Baker Bone, or I call him Gordon Baker Brown. And he's like, Gordon Baker Bone. I was like, oh, I'm sorry.
He didn't rant on you for a few.
It's just a theme of unprofessionalism. My life's in the toilet. Anyway, Colin, how do you do, bud? You're telling me you're entering your last year of Rutgers. You're studying history and political science.
Yep.
And you're doing comedy all the time.
Yeah. I've been doing it for like 2 years now. And then the past year, I started really getting into it. I do it like every night. I try to write every day. I really like it. It's my favorite thing.
And you were telling me off camera or off microphone, I hope I can talk about this, that you see a therapist once a week. You have clinical depression.
Yeah.
Is comedy like just as important or more important than seeing the therapist for what you got?
Yeah, definitely. I don't like the whole notion that like, you know, comedy is therapy for me. It's like you're talking about your dick. Like it's not that deep, you know.
But also it's like comedy's therapy. There's art therapy, there's painting therapy. It's something to give you a direction.
I think any creative outlet can be cathartic and therapeutic, but I don't necessarily buy the notion that doing stand-up comedy, for me anyway, is therapy in itself. I think everyone needs to be able to, like, I wouldn't be able to do comedy unless I had the ability to sort out my thoughts with a mental health care professional. Like, I can't, like, I'm sure there's recordings of me on stage just, like, after or about, and I'm just, like, I'm, like, not present, and, you know, I need to be able to talk to somebody and sort it out and figure out things, and then I can go on stage and kill it, and I can be in the moment.
So you would, like, disassociate?
Oh, yeah, constantly. Yeah, definitely.
How was your childhood?
Good, honestly. I didn't get beat. I have a good relationship with my dad, which is horse shit. I feel like I could get some good material from that. But my parents are solid. I sort of was like reserved. Like I didn't. There's a lot of shit going on, and my folks had to deal with that. And I just sort of kind of did my own thing for a long time. But they're good parents. They're good parents. They're good people.
So they were working real hard.
Yeah. There's a
and
point.
That's the thing. They gave you love, but they couldn't give you as much attention, maybe.
Yeah, you know. I mean, I feel like every comic just didn't get hugged enough, and now that's why they're doing it. But like, you know, my dad had to work two jobs until he went to college in his 40s. My mom didn't. I grew up in a house of six kids, so my mom raised a bunch of children, and then she went to school. So both my parents went to school in their 40s. Got their degrees, and then once things got a little bit better, a little bit easier, then I could form like a much, like, my relationship with my parents right now is way better than it was when I was a child. Like, it is, like, I can actually, everybody can kind of relax and talk about stuff, and it's nice. Yeah. But yeah, no shitty stories to say. I had a pretty...
A little bit of neglect, only because there were six kids, right, and two parents working full-time, right? So then, when I'm doing the math, I go, okay, well, these kids were like, it was like Lord of the Flies, you know?
Yeah.
And so,
Well, that's something I've been trying to work out, is like, I always like, oh, I wasn't abused, and my therapist would be like, you know, it doesn't matter, they weren't abused, you're still valid. I'm like, all right, so... It's good childhood. Good childhood. A happy kid.
Hey, shout
didn't
out.
Get no one beat me up. No, my parents didn't beat me up. So we're, you know.
No physical abuse.
No physical abuse. Never got yelled at to the point where I was gonna. I was never locked in the basement. You know, we're chilling.
Tell me your secrets. Last night we were at the Stress Factory together. And I watched you perform, and I was kind of moved to ask you to do this podcast today, and all. I had this on my calendar, and I told you about the Old Glory. Come on. Anyway, we're at Old Glory. Waldo Maldonado puts on a lovely mic over here. So I took Colin along, and I said, hey, you know, because I've been watching Colin for a while, and I said to you last night, I said, man, you really turned a corner with your stand-up, from and you figured two skills out that you didn't previously have like 6 months ago. The two skills are, number one, stage presence. Number two, commitment. Because before, like, and I imagine this is part of, if you have a diagnosis of clinical depression, right? Before it was like, you were like, oh, let me get through this. Like, your stage presence, you know? And maybe it's just because I saw you at, you know, different venues or whatever, and that was the room, that was the feeling in the room. But you're like, I'm just kind of going through the motions. But last night at the Stress Factory, man, you're acting out your jokes with your face. Like, you're emphasizing your jokes with your face. You're in the moment of the joke. You're delivering what's funny about this, who, what, where, why. You know, before I feel like you were like kind of putting out a list. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. The biggest issue I've had, because I've the compliment I get the most from other comics is that I'm a good writer, and I appreciate it. But I feel like that's the perfect way to say it. As I was listing things, like I was seeing it as like I'll say this, and then I'll do a punchline. But I feel like I'm sort of now finding, like, a different avenue that's more my own to get to the punchline. You
know, it's not just that you're looser on stage. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say looser. I would say you're having the confidence to commit to your jokes harder.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's very true, too. I didn't have the commitment. I do appreciate the kind words. It's just something that comes with that for me. It just kind of comes with time. I'm still working on it. I'm still trying.
You're 2 years in, but I was like, wow, you hit this corner, and I saw you hit this corner, and notice why you're better, so that it puts like, oh wow, okay, now I have to act out, commit to my jokes as I'm doing them.
You know? Absolutely, man.
They're not enough rote. That you got to be a performer. Can we talk some shit about another comic? I'm not gonna name names, because then I'll just end up bleeping it out when I listen back to this. Shout out to the last podcast. I'm not going to name names. There's one comic. Okay, I feel like I'm the elder statesman sometimes. I don't want to impose, but when I have something nice to say, I'll go out and I'll go to that person. I'll say, hey, man, you need to know that this is great. Okay. Another comic I got really annoyed with, and I said, hey, man, can I give you advice about something? And he was like, yeah, what do you want? I go, you can't do impressions of other comics. Okay?
I know you're talking about
that. And he goes, no, I just do a little bit of this comic, a little bit. It's just like 30 seconds of one comic. I say, yeah, you can't do that. He goes, why? I go, are you a cover band? And he goes, no, I'm an impressionist. I go, the one group of people you cannot impersonate is a comedian when you're doing a stand-up set. Yeah. Because then you're biting what they're doing.
Yeah.
A la Carlos Mencia. You have to know what this... The rules... look, there has to be honor among thieves. Yeah. Okay? We're all going up there. We're shaking our funny sticks at the audience. We're trying to get a response, you know? There's just rules. You can't steal other people's material. You can't pretend to be another comedian. So why aren't they seeing that guy? What do you have to bring to the table?
I know you're talking about. I've known this guy for like maybe a couple months. I don't like impressions. I don't think I don't think that. I'm not saying there's no skill. I think there's definitely. I can't do them. But it's like I don't think they're funny. That's just me. I don't think impressions are funny. I'm talking to this guy, and he was asking me if it was a good set, and I said, you're asking the wrong guy. I don't like impressions. Like, I just don't. Yeah. And then, so we're going back and forth, and he's asking for my advice, which is weird, but whatever. And I'm talking to him, and I'm like, I've heard you riff before, and you're funny. Like, you can actually, like, write a joke, and I think you should write jokes.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow, what a concept.
Yeah, I don't know if he's the kind of person that's going to take criticism well, or I don't know at all, that really is a person.
But so then he went up before me last night, and the last conversation we had was, you can't do it. Mm-hmm. Like, please don't, because you're not a cover band. He goes, I didn't know this was a debate. I go, okay, you're not a cover band. What's your response? I didn't know this was a debate. No, I'm right about this, period. It's not a debate. I know exactly what I'm talking about. I'm not being a dick to him either. You just can't do that. You can't steal other people's shit or do or go, oh, I'm Kevin Hart and look at me do it. No. You gotta go see him do that. You gotta buy a ticket for Kevin Hart.
And also the thing is, he's just putting people in other situations, so there's no.
There's no jokes.
I've ranted about this a lot. Not him, not this person in particular, but just people. Like, I don't know how to get laughs other than doing jokes.
Right.
And
if
so
he doesn't know how to get laughs other than impressions. But here's what you
no,
do.
No, but what I'm saying is a lot of comics right now are a lot of, maybe like a lot of new folk, they don't understand, and I'm new too, but like they don't understand like what a joke is. Like that has to be a punchline. You have to have a premise, introduce it, and then have a punchline. And that's the thing. And I'm trying to figure out right now how to couch it in my own way without being like, here's a punchline.
Yeah.
But there's got to be that. Like, I don't understand the whole
concept. I don't know what he's doing. And so then he went before me. I said, don't do that impression of Sebastian Maniscalco. Okay? Just don't. You can't do that. He goes, I only did one comic. And I did, okay, whatever. Yo, last night you did four.
Yeah.
So he did Seinfeld, Kevin Hart, Sebastian, and he's doing a remix. It's like he's rubbing in the advice I tried to give him in my face before I go up.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know,
I
that's what it seemed like to me, where it's like,
I think someone made a comment to him last night, and he got like a little self-conscious about it. So I'm pretty sure he was asking around. But I don't know. He seems like a nice dude. I just don't. I don't know how new he is, but I think that's really all I told him. I'm not gonna like shit on him or anything. I'm just like, listen, I don't like impressions. You're asking the wrong guy, but I think you should just write jokes.
But, like, why can't he do an impression of, you know, not Michael Jackson, but O.J. Simpson or, you know, other well-tread. Like, just, do an impression of Barack Obama.
He has a Barack Obama impression.
Then do that with your own jokes, obviously. Don't do stand-up comics. That to me, it's just a fact. Don't do that.
I haven't even thought of that before. Interesting. Because, yeah, it's like a cover band at that point. Like, why would you?
Why? Are you allowed to steal jokes? Everyone knows, oh, you can't steal other people's jokes. You can't do that either.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Like, you know when I was starting out, I was just doing Mulaney. Like, my cadence was just Mulaney.
Okay, but you're...
So what I'm saying is that's not good. Like, you shouldn't have you shouldn't have the cadence of somebody else. So
you're talking about the timing in which you said all your joke. You were like biting his timing.
The timing.
His
I know. And I was physically just, people were like, you sound like Mulaney. Okay. Like, and I'm like, thanks. Like, I didn't. You know, I was 6 months in. And I know. I've heard a lot of people when they start out, they're just doing Louis.
Yeah.
You know, they're just like kind of mumbling out their words. Like a fat ginger guy. So it's like, I get that. So I see what you're saying. So if that's not okay, I don't know why doing an impression of it.
Even though he was like name checking, he was going, I'm going to do this impression. I'm going to do this. He's name checking, but then he's doing it. And so then if he's getting laughs, it's because of their shit. That's just how I feel.
And honestly, I super wouldn't even mind any of it if he had the punchlines. Stuff.
If he would write his pencil, but then he would just do like a personality fragment of the.
Well, I think what you could do is like couch the impressions. Like, you're a good impressionist, but that doesn't have to be your whole thing. Like, you could tell a story, and then he could be like, this guy sounded like, and then he could do Sebastian, and then have a joke hidden in that story somewhere. You know?
Yeah.
Don't like impressions. I'm not an impression guy. I never liked them.
We're not naming names. Nobody knows
no
who we're
talking about.
No one's
naming names.
All right, we got to take a break.
All right.
And we're continuing on. Wow, that was a little bit of a break. We both did the Old Glory. What'd you think of that room?
It's a great mic. I wish I was ready for the heat. It was hot in there. I messed up a joke, but I think it went really well.
Yeah, that's a weird thing about that room. Like it's fucking hot. So, like, literally hot. Like, the crowd is on fire. It's a great crowd. It's, like, 86 degrees downstairs.
Yeah.
So, like, literally, like, your brain. I write a set list, like, just because it's, like, my brain is, like, not working right when it's, like, that fucking hot, you know?
No, exactly. I was actually messing up my set. I was messing up writing my set list because of the heat. I was, like, burnt out. and I went on 6. It was like I did 3 minutes. Like, at any rate.
Well, look at this place we're in. You're a college boy. It's like a frat house in here.
Yeah,
please. Bachelor pad.
Please excuse the beer cans and the weed.
Hey, man, remnants. That's how I live.
Sorry. Yeah. It's nice. I try not to, you know. Don't tell anybody how I live. Like, I don't.
Don't tell.
Really, look, that's.
You just got to keep this shit real. We were talking and we were saying about people we like, people we don't like. Yeah. We're not going to name names because we were naming some names off the thing and it's too much inside baseball. But you got to find your friends. And like, you know, the thing about stand-up is it's really scary.
Yeah.
And, you know, you also kind of want almost a peer review process. It's like, you know, if you do good in front of the crowd, or if you bomb in front of the crowd, but you're insecure, you might just want to ask, hey, what did you think about this? Like, you need like some kind of people to go, hey, can I run this by you? What do you think of this? You know,
exactly.
Especially if you're like 6 months in, you know,
that's sort of the beauty of, doing comedy with the same kind of people, like in the same group. It's the camaraderie that comes along with it. Like, I'm not really really good friends with anybody who's like been doing it for 6+ years, but the people I'm coming up with, the people I'm starting out with, that's all we do is we'll just hang out. My friend Devin, really good comic, every time we're in the car we're just talking comedy and we're just talking about each other's sets. I do the same thing with Akash and Scott. It's just, it's the camaraderie that's kind of like my favorite part about the scene, I guess.
Yeah, you and Akash Anand are both Rutgers undergrads.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yeah, we're doing it.
Did you ever see him in class or in the cafeteria?
No, he's supply chain management. I'm history policy, so we don't really, I see him in the library sometimes, though.
Yeah?
Yeah, we actually run 2 separate clubs for comedy at Rutgers, yeah. It's he does a club. It's more so for like branching out, going to the city and stuff. My club's more like a workshop thing.
His club is like to do with Manhattan stand up.
It's like he's Rutgers Stand Up Society. I'm Rutgers Comedy Club, and we're both in each other's club. Like we both do each other's stuff. It's just they have different goals, like different mission statements.
Mm-hmm.
Like mine is the one I run with my friend Eve and Matt. It's more so like. Go up. We cater to like new people too. It's a good space to do it and get like feedback from other comics that are students.
Mm.
And that's, you know, I seem to like it. We put on a show every semester. And Akash is more so like he wants to like book comics and he wants to do like, you know, like go out to the city, like field trips to the city and stuff like that. And he comes to the workshops, I go to his open mics and stuff, and then we coexist. It's really nice. Nice little.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
But then you both go to the comedy scene of New Jersey for mm-hmm. the spiritual information, and then you're the ascended master to your respected clubs in Rutgers.
Yeah.
At the local level, at the grassroots level, you're starting to make contacts at the other level, the real level.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's...
Talking
it's...
to old washed-up hacks like me.
No, it. That's sort of the neat thing about it is like, I mean, out of our two clubs, I'd say definitely he is and I am are into it the most out of most of the comics. Maybe the person I just mentioned, Devin, he's probably into it more than I am. We both go to the city a lot and stuff. But you know, that's interesting. Like we're like representatives, like ambassadors. Like look what we've learned. Like
I was in New York City. there's this joke about eating the tranny midget hooker's asshole, and I spiritually learned something from. So now I can tell the freshmen at Rutgers.
Now I can share my wisdom with you youngsters. Yeah.
Sit around. Who wasn't making it show business? Then you just become Harvey Weinstein. Hey, girls.
I pick up smoking just to look the part.
Yeah, it's crazy. Isn't it crazy? Like, the more you learn about show business, it's like there's these crazy stories where, like, you know, someone who's on Twitter when they're 16, like, all of a sudden they blow up. And then other people are on a journey for a lifetime trying to hone a craft. You know, it's like...
Well, right now, I'm not even... Yeah. The way I see it, I don't even consider show business. I just want to get funnier. That's all I'm really worried about. like, I just need to, for my own sanity, like, I need to make sure that I'm writing every day.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the kind of the cool thing about stand-up, too, is that you can... I was talking about this earlier. Like, if I'm having, like, a bout of depression, comedy really does help me out a lot. Like, I'll wake up at, like, noon, and if not for the fact that I want to hold myself accountable and write, I'd sleep till 5, you know? So yeah. I'll wake up, and I'll write, and the best part is I can go up that night. I get the instant slap in the face if it's bad, or the instant shot of dopamine if it's good.
Yeah.
You know? And it's really great to just be able to exist in that space and just kind of go out there and bomb. Bombing's great. I actually really like the the sobering.
Oh, I feel something. What is that, shame?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow, that tastes delicious.
I love it. So give me more, please.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Yeah.
Oh, that taste of self-hatred in the back of your throat?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
When you eat a hot pile of shit off a new joke.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's you know, I tried out... I'm at a point now, I think I'm just kind of doing... It's not like... I haven't written out a joke entirely and done it on stage in a while. Right now, I'm just kind of trying out new tags. And then if a tag gets more laughs in the punchline, I'm like, maybe I can make a joke out of that initial tag completely.
Yeah. No, and also people, I see that they'll do, like, the same stuff for a minute, like, for a while. And then all of a sudden, boom, then they go, oh, I get it. And, they just explode with a new 18 minutes because they were tired of doing the same shit all the time.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that's what I like to see. That's what I like to see when people are, they commit. Am I blocking anybody in or anything like that?
No, no, that's just my ups. Oh, no, maybe. Let me see. I don't think anyone's leaving, but I'll text.
Like Tyler Langlois, I think, he did my podcast maybe two months ago, and I was like, whoa, all of a sudden. And like, he was never bad. Mm-hmm. But I saw one set he did at the Stress Factory where it was like a game changer. I want to say this was 2 months ago. So this is July, June, May. Around May 10th, I don't know. I just saw him fucking crush so hard the Stress Factory one time where I was like, I've never seen him crush that hard. And I was like, let me figure out what he did or what he learned since I've known him. That just turned that on. And for you, I was watching you very carefully, and I was going, okay, I think I saw enough of this cat where I go, oh, okay, you're just believing in yourself and you're committing to your jokes now. And it's like a game changer. It's like night and day different. Versus jokes before you learn that skill and after.
Yeah, it's kind of like how, like, it's a muscle, the confidence. Confidence in general is just a muscle that you're working out. You're faking it until it's like, oh, okay, I believe in myself. It's like when you start dating when you're younger, and it's like your first date and you're fucking nervous, flop sweat, you want your heart all the time or whatever.
Mm.
And then now it's like, you know, after you've been doing it for a few years or your whole life or whatever the fuck you want to do it, you're like, oh, okay, first date, no problem. It's like you can kind of just, you just got to keep on doing it. It's the same thing. But back to that, Tyler is fucking hilarious. It's like,
hell,
he never fails to make me like crack up whenever he's on stage. He's a fucking
I don't know. I think 2 months ago something changed, and he's just like a murderer now. I don't know. Maybe that was just maybe it's a tainted perspective. Maybe he's always been a murderer, and I just realized it recently. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like, I don't know. I saw him turn a corner, maybe.
That'll happen sometimes. Sometimes people will just kind of throw out old material and just kind of work from the ground up.
Yeah.
I see that a lot.
He's just fearless. He has some jokes that are, like Tyler Langlois especially, like, he's got some jokes where it's just like, he talks about making out with a kid, and just like, doesn't, like, the level of not giving a fuck is like that, you know.
And that's the thing, just being fearless and kind of like, understanding that there's a line and then kind of riding it.
Crazy. He's just not willing... He's not afraid to make himself look like the biggest piece of shit.
Yeah.
And that's what I really respect, where it's like, when I, you know, there's some comics, I can name their names, in New Orleans, I won't, but they want to, like, look cute and like, oh, look at these skinny jeans. Oh, look at this. Look how smart I am about socially relevant issues. It's like, you're trying to look right about stuff. And that is death.
It doesn't matter if you're like, people want to just have a point. Like, it's either they want to make a point, like they see like Harlan or
or, you know, like Bill Burr or whatever, and they want to be like, oh, I'm going to send a message. And it's like, you are forgetting the most important part about stand-up comedy, and that is having jokes. Like, that's the biggest thing. That's like, it's really, and I've been bitching about this for my entire life. Like, like for as long as I've been doing it, I'm like, there's no like punchlines.
Wait, you like impressions though.
yeah. I'm a big impression fan.
Definitely. I'm just going to start doing Kevin Hart cover band. Like, I'm just going to straight up do covers of his greatest bits.
Oh boy.
And go on tour.
Some Queen cover bands that live like that.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, dude.
Oh, there's a band in LA that they're just a cover band for 80s hair metal, and they're called something Tiger or Twisted Panther, something Panther. And dude, they're all driving around in Mercedes.
Yeah.
Like, they play the Whiskey a Go-Go.
Oh, yeah.
They get their dick sucked every night, and they have all the cash, all the cocaine, all the Mercedes. And all they're doing is, like, doing Poison. Then they're doing Sweet Child of Mine, yes. Like a deep cut off of fucking Appetite for Destruction. Then they're going back and they're doing one, like, AC/DC. And, dude, they're, like, they have all the money. It's just like, what?
That's the dream.
Isn't that crazy? You didn't write one song ever.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
But they put on the costumes. They have the long hair. And that's just what it is, you know?
I would love to live the life of a comedian without any of the fame. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Being famous sounds like a fucking nightmare, honestly.
I don't know.
I would love to be like at a level like people who are like just kind of in the middle forever. You know, like they're not. They can still go to Whole Foods or whatever. They can still get their food at Trader Joe's.
Yeah, but like there's so many delivery apps. Like my sister, like she's not famous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she uses Amazon Prime Pantry. She doesn't have to see anybody, you know? She does a grocery shop with the fucking normies, you know what I mean? She just gets that bitch delivered, you know?
Your sister's famous?
No. She's friggin' works in online advertising.
Okay, yeah.
She gets her. You don't have to deal with the muggles.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's true. I don't know.
Now with delivery, food delivery, you could be anonymous and you could live like Howard Hughes your whole life. Just like grow your nails out, be a billionaire. Oh, you're kicking me out of the hotel? I own this hotel now.
I don't know. I like people, though. I like showing up. I like just kind of being a weirdo, and they know I'm a weirdo, and they know that's how I am, and I can just kind of exist.
Yeah.
And say the weird shit I say, and then...
Like, I mean, fame, not fame, nothing like that. I don't know nothing about that, right?
Yeah.
I want to make money with stand-up.
Yeah?
I don't know nothing about anything else. I'd like to sell some screenplays... I'd like to maybe have some TV shows. Basically, like, I think the career of Ricky Gervais is like the perfect career. Where he does stand-up specials, then he goes and does a TV series, he goes back to stand-up. I think it's perfect because he can just do whatever he wants to do whenever he wants to do it, you know? To me, it's like, oh my God, he lives like a king on earth.
See, to me, the perfect career is like Mark Norman, David Attell, like just club comics, like they can just kind of, they can do the road and they make a good amount of money and they can still like live their fucking life. They don't have to worry about,
yeah,
just like, you know, like they can fuck up and then they don't have to, it's not like a scandal. It's just like, yeah, you goof, you know?
It is weird how, like, you know, I don't want to speak out of turn, but you know, David Attell, like maybe he jerked off in front of somebody, but it never made the news. And then crushed Louis C.K.
Yeah, man.
So it's like he like turned a corner where he was like more famous than like, you know, Ariana Grande at one point.
Yeah.
And then
he's a household name.
Yeah, Louis C.K. is a household name. He got a little too famous, and then something trivial took him down. Because people were connecting it to the Bill Cosbys, to the Harvey Weinsteins of the world. Where what he did was nothing compared to that.
But you don't have to hear this on this podcast. Because you can just go to any podcast right now. And go to like 10 minutes in and you'll hear this conversation.
But you say about fame or whatever. It's like, what does that mean? It's like, what do you do with it? I don't know. To me, if I got some cash, if I was a little famous, I would fly immediately to the Ukraine and get the hottest wife possible. And never have a sex scandal in the world. You know what I mean?
I think if I got to a point where I could like make money like sustainably and I didn't have to like go to the shitty job, I don't know, I'd probably just get like really good sheets for once, like actual good cat thread count.
Yeah.
And enjoy my sleep. I'm a simple man. I don't
What country would you fly to if you had, like, fuck you money to get the hottest wife?
Well, first, I think the question is, what country has the best thread count for sheets? I think that's the
same. What? I think we're on the same different pages here.
I
What kind of ladies do you like, Colin?
Oh, yeah, okay. I don't
What's
have
your
a,
type?
My type probably, I don't know. I don't want to be racist. I don't have a type. I just don't, I don't have a preference, really. It's just whatever. It's kind of like a feeling thing. I used to be like, oh, I don't like black chicks, but then I started seeing a black girl, and I was like, never mind.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
I used to be some like, black chick, like, cracked you, and you're like, oh, wow.
Well, I think that just came from a fucking blatant insecurity. I'm learning, isn't it?
Where have you traveled?
I've been to almost all the states.
Okay.
My family, we do this thing where we go to all the baseball stadiums. So I've been to almost all of them.
Really?
Except for, like, California and Washington.
Can I ask? I've never been to, like, the Montana, Wisconsin, Michigan.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any of that. What's that like?
Michigan is pretty shitty.
Ann Arbor, you've been there?
Yeah. It's all right. It's not terrible. I haven't been to Wisconsin. I've been to Minnesota, though.
What's that like?
Which is like Diet Miss Wisconsin.
Is that what they
People
got?
Are really nice in Minnesota. I had to like lower my guard. Because in Jersey, if you get looked at the wrong way, you're like, all right, I guess he's going to fight me at some point today. Like,
yeah.
But Wisconsin, people like holding doors. I bumped into somebody and they apologized to me. It's so weird, yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. It's like, they apologize and give me some cheese. And I'm like, all right.
Oh, the door hit you, don't you know?
Yeah, don't you know? Yeah, I know. It's fucking great. I haven't been there in the winter. I don't recommend it. But it's great in the summer. It's a good trip. You should go.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what the comedy scene is like there, but...
I think Madison, Wisconsin has some things going on.
Oh, yeah?
They had a teacher strike one time.
I have no knowledge of that part of the country whatsoever. No knowledge.
I think one of my favorites... So I've been all over the baseball parks. So what I do is I just kind of level the city with the park. Like if the park was shit, I'm like, oh, that city sucks.
Oh, like, okay. Like,
but,
yeah,
but
the
like,
hot dogs are terrible.
Yeah. But I went to, I think my favorite park is like Wrigley Field in Chicago.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you ever been over there?
No, no.
Oh, Chicago's great.
I've never been to Chicago.
Don't listen to the news. Chicago is wonderful.
I hear someone was telling me that the crime's a little bad.
I mean, crime as a whole has gone down in America in the past like 4 decades. Like, the odds of getting stabbed on the street are...
Why is Wrigley Field the perfect baseball field?
Oh man, because it's a field. It's like you go to all these other new stadiums and they're just like their stadiums. They're like mausoleums. Like the new Yankee Stadium. It's like a fucking museum, you know?
Yeah.
You go to even City Field. I'm a Mets fan. Even City Field, it's beautiful, but it's like just massive. It forgets its roots. Wrigley Field has been there since 1906, I believe.
Yeah.
The first stadiums. It has its roots. So you go in, you walk in, and you look down, and you wherever you're sitting, you're like, that's a massive person because you can see in relative term. What's that called? The depth perception isn't fucked up by being all the way up. You're actually like there, and you're like, holy shit, that guy's massive. Look at his arms, you know. Mm-hmm. And also, it just got so much charm. It's got the Vine Wall, or I forget what they call that, but it's, you know, it's like just...
It's like an Ivy League stadium.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Yeah, it really is. It's like it's like the Harvard of baseball
stadium. I like the old Yankee Stadium. I will never set foot inside the new Yankee Stadium.
It's dog shit. And that's not even... I don't even really hate the Yankees. I just think their new stadium is just horrible.
Because I remember I went to Temple my freshman year when I was 18,
mm-hmm.
and then I transferred to the new school for my sophomore year.
Yeah.
But I went to a Phillies game,
mm-hmm.
and first of all, they had Dollar Hot Dog Day. Okay? So they're taking care of the fans.
Yeah.
Oh, you want 3 hot dogs? That'll be $3.
Yes.
Okay? Then the tickets, we're college students. We're fucking broke. I got a ticket for $12.50.
Love it.
It was in the bleachers. So, like, you're eating hot dogs to your heart's content,
yes.
and having a seat for $20.
Beautiful, right?
You try to go to the new Yankee Stadium, okay? Your seat is $124 for a bad seat,
yeah.
right? You want to have 3 hot dogs? Okay, those are going to be $70
yeah.
each, okay? Now, oh, you got to park, you got to do this, you got to do
yes.
that. You're paying $1,200 You know, and it's just like, I got fucked in the ass 9 times before someone threw a ball or a strike.
I've been trying really hard. I've been trying really hard to stop hating rich people. Like, I've been it's been so difficult for me.
Yeah.
Because I grew up poor, and I'm like middle class. Like right now, like my folks are doing well for themselves. But I grew up poor. It's so hard to see somebody in like moccasins and like a suit at a baseball game, and for me not to go like fuck you. Like it's so difficult for me. But speaking of $1 hot dogs. Before I went to see the Expos when I was a kid with my folks.
And is that Houston?
Montreal.
Oh, wow.
So they used to have a baseball team in the MLB.
Oh, wow.
And Canada was Montreal Expos and Toronto Blue Jays. Blue Jays are still there.
Okay.
Expos, before there was like the last game, like they were going to be done. That stadium was getting leveled, the teams no more. One of the last like months of their games, $5 box seats. $1 hot dogs.
Fuck yeah.
So me and my folks and my brothers, we all got to go sit like kings. We sat in these amazing seats, $5, $1 hot dogs. That's when my childhood obesity started to happen. And like, it's just fucking amazing, yeah.
No, but it's just like, look, a hot dog should be like $1. You know why? Because a pack of 12 is like, you know, $3.70.
Yeah, yeah.
So then you go to a Yankee game and one hot dog is $12.46. It's like, are you out of your fucking mind?
It forgets its roots, man. It's
the working people's game, you know?
And now it's something for, like, you know, corporate America to do on, like, you know, a business trip. And it's like, so Wrigley Field, you know, the prices are jacked up sometimes. That's just how it is. But if you want, like, an authentic baseball, MLB baseball experience, and just step into a time when it was just simpler, and you can see the fucking stone from 1906. Go to Wrigley.
Wow.
Fenway too. Fenway's beautiful too.
What a great advertisement for baseball. Yeah. I could never watch baseball on TV, but like once every 2 years, once every, you know, whatever. Mostly when I'm dating a girl, it's like it is a good date to like take a girl to a baseball game.
Dude,
you know?
Baseball is the most masculine thing about me. It's really it. I'm such a pussy. Baseball is the one thing that I love. Yeah.
I remember when I was in high school, me and my girlfriend went to a baseball game. Mm-hmm. And at the Yankee Stadium, the old Yankee Stadium, not the new one. And something weird happened, right? Someone threw a baseball and it hit the front of home plate. Okay?
Yeah.
And it bunted forward.
Jeez.
So I'm in line. I go, wait a minute. What does that mean? So, okay, yeah. The baseball hit home plate. It bounced forward.
Yeah.
The guy ran as if it was a bunt.
Yeah.
I go, no, that's a ball.
Yeah.
He didn't swing at it. So it hit front plate, went forward. Uh-huh. He runs. I go, whoa, that's bullshit. Some guy shirtless, Gerard, was drinking. He had 2 beers in his hand. He was drinking off one. I go, that's bullshit. He goes, no, bro, it comes with a fucking, that's a fucking bunt, man. If you choose to run, that could be a bunt. If you don't run, that's a ball. He chose to fucking run. And that, like, he's shirtless. He's spilling beer on himself. His information was impeccably accurate.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's like he knew the rules backward and forward. A play I've never seen happen before. But if everyone's seat is $600, they're all hedge fund cunts and they don't know nothing about baseball.
And you know my favorite part about baseball is just the obscure facts that the announcers know. Yeah. Like when that happened, I'm sure the people up front were like, "Oh, well, that hasn't happened since the summer of 1983 when what's his Dick Jones did that for a run and an RBI." You know?
Yeah.
They just have that like just at the top of their dome. It's beautiful. Love the obscure facts. I love that the drunk guys with no shirts know them all too. It's wonderful.
But it's like my thing is like when the seats are priced a certain level, mm-hmm. you have passionate baseball fans that, you know, this is their one day off. They got to go to the steel mill tomorrow. Yeah. You know, I don't know. It's just a better for me. It's and you talk about like, oh, try not to hate poor people and stuff like that. But I totally agree. It's like that's what it
rich
is.
People.
Rich people try not to hate rich people. Yeah. Poor people are better because they, I don't know, this is all they got. The baseball game's the highlight of their year they get to.
Yeah. I fucking,
And that enthusiasm is like, you know, can permeate the stadium, can get in the old bricks from 1911 at Wrigley Field.
Yeah, no, it's great. I love it. Going to Toronto this summer, actually.
Whoa.
Yeah, so what I'm doing now is I'm doing the vacations with my family.
except now I'm 21 plus, so now I'm just doing it with my friends. I'm getting, baseball's way more fun when you can drink, by the way. It's just night and day how much better it is when you're
chilling. Oh, I get this game. Where do your parents live? Are they in Jersey?
Yeah, they grew up in Newark, Newark born. We live in Belleville, New Jersey now.
Where's that?
It's literally right next to Newark. Belleville, okay. Belleville's just a small
Belleville.
Tumor.
Oh, okay.
It's a small tumor connected to Newark, New Jersey. Yeah.
It's like prostate cancer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Equally shitty.
Yeah, Newark is tough, man.
It's not terrible. I hung out there a lot with friends. Because, Belleville is I can open my door and I can throw a baseball into Newark. Like, that's how close I am. Like, the sign's right there. Mm-hmm. I never had any issues. Just don't go to the projects. You're not going to have a good time there.
Yeah, Patterson's tough, too.
Patterson's difficult. I don't know. I feel like it's like if you haven't been, I'm sure people who live around Patterson are like, yeah, Patterson's fine. And I think that's just how it is. I'm here at Rutgers now. So whenever people ask where am I from, I go Belleville and they go, where's that? And then I go Newark and they're like, oh, oh, cool. They're like, oh, cool. Mm. You know? So it's weird, but,
I don't know. I feel like New Brunswick is like everything that's nice about Newark in a different city. You know?
Yeah, they
like, half of Newark is, like, nice like New Brunswick, and half of it is really shitty.
They both have their own respective charm.
Yeah.
I personally love New Brunswick. I feel safe here.
Yeah.
My friend lives in, the woods, and I'm, trying to go to sleep, and there's just nothing. And I felt horrified. I'm like, is there a bear there? Like, I don't even know. But, in New Brunswick, I feel safe. There's a woman who used to outside my old apartment, just down the street. Her name is Terry Velvet, and she would just play the guitar poorly outside of my apartment, every night. And I gave her money because she knows where I live, you know, and I just didn't want to, But, she just plays fucking music every night, and I felt safe from, just going to bed to her sweet nothings. I don't care. I just...
Oh, that's a nice
one. I'm hearing sirens and people getting mugged and shit. I feel nice. I don't know. It's just... Mm. I just like I live right next to a bar. I don't care. It's nice. I'd rather that than the fucking woods any day with the chirping and the... I don't know.
Yeah, I think the woods is a good place to vacation, but...
That's exactly it.
I like to be in the city.
That's totally it, yeah. Because it's peaceful, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can really abuse somebody in the woods.
Abuse myself.
That's where I was raised. Mm.
Were you really? You're from the woods?
I'm from Long Valley.
Explains the beard.
Yeah. I grew into it. Oh, yeah. No, I don't know. The beard was more like when I lost my hair, I need some affectation. I need some sort of hairline, even if it's south of the border. I don't know. I just went down.
Nah, it's good. It's luscious. It's you should be in a commercial for beards.
I feel like if my beard wasn't so aggressive... My body's production of follicles would have gone. Like, if I had a patchy beard, I'd have a full head of hair.
Yeah.
You can't get both.
I know. That's
you can't get everything.
I can't grow a beard to save my life.
Right.
I like my hair a lot. I know the second that this starts leaving, this is going to come in. And
when your balls drop.
I'm still waiting. I'll let you know. I'll send you an email when it happens. I'll let you know when they drop.
You're going to call me one day, hey, what's up, Eric? I'll be like, oh, your balls are dropped. Your hairline's fucked.
And right? I'm like, yeah, voice cracking.
All right, but I got a beard, though. I started getting into paleontology. I don't know why. I just have different tastes now when I'm older.
Baseball sucks. I watch football now. Man.
I've had multiple concussions. And I started wearing lipstick every time. It made me feel something different.
Your balls don't have to drop to just start wearing lipstick. That's my philosophy.
Yeah, we were talking outside, and one of the guys, I forget what he was saying, but he was like, he wanted to go a little bit... he was thinking, what if I did my hair like this? I straightened my hair and I got a lip ring. I think if I get the lip ring, my hair is straight, then it's like I'm emo, but it's like I still keep my own identity. I don't think people know how much guys think about their appearance. Everyone says, oh, girls think about their appearance or doing makeup in the mirror all the time. Yeah, you know, guys actually do.
Yeah.
Maybe just comics, because they're on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they think about what they're visually they're putting out there.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I used to not when I was younger. I used to just, you know, sweats and like sandals and shit, and you know.
Yeah, just like straight functional clothing.
Yeah, yeah, but I you know, I also didn't care what I, you know, looked like. It was a self worth thing, I think. But now, you know, I try to dress a little nice, like.
Makes you feel good.
It does. It really, it boosts up your self-confidence, which is really important.
But this guy, you know, he's like 30 and he's like, I think I'm getting a lip ring. And I'm like, now? You know what I mean? Yeah, that's I'm like, I guess it just happened. Like, even if you're 20, it's like, you know, oh, now I have it. You know what I mean? Yeah, but it's like, it's like you live 3 decades. Like, your 4, 5, and 6 is going to be with a lip ring. I don't know. You know what I mean?
No,
it's like,
definitely.
Is that something you grow into?
I think I always assumed you had to have something like horrible happen to you to get a lip ring. I always assumed you was like after a certain amount of beatings, you're like, I'll show him, and then you get it. But
yeah, fuck you, Darren.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll staple my own face.
Yeah, again, I can't relate. I had that shitty, horrible, good relationship with my dad. So
yeah, that's weird that you like. Have clinical depression after like 2 decent parents. To me, I'm just like, wait a minute, what's going on here?
Yeah, it's an enigma.
But again, not that I'm no dolphin psychologist, but I saw this psychologist talking about orphanage homes, and he was saying that they did an experiment where in China, if you have an orphanage home, mm-hmm. every 12 orphans have to have one worker.
Okay.
So he goes, I'm gonna study these kids with the 12-to-1 ratio.
Okay.
I'm gonna set up another orphanage next door where there's every 3 kids has one worker.
Yeah.
To see if that's gonna make a difference or not make a difference.
Yeah.
And he goes, the 3-to-1 ratio kids, their IQs were 12 points better. Mm-hmm. So imagine if all the 12-to-1 kids, their IQs are 90. These kids were 102.
Yeah.
That's a huge difference.
Absolutely.
You know? And so you go, wow. What he was talking about was the cerebral cortex, how during the very young ages, your cerebral cortex is growing, it's blossoming like a tree. It needs love, affection, attention.
Yeah.
You know, people reading to you, people, you know, doting upon you grows your cerebral cortex, you know? Mm-hmm. And he goes, that's the result of the, you know. And so I was like, wow, you know? And then I think about, like Brian Regan, you know? Brian Regan is a comic. He's one of my favorite comics.
Yeah.
He grew up in a household where his 2 parents, he was one of, like, 15 kids. And I'm going, how is he the smartest comic I know or one of the best comics in the world? And he had 2 for 12 ratio. You know what I mean?
No, I think my folks, they, you know, my dad, I think I mentioned this earlier, my dad worked 2 jobs. I never really, you know, I didn't really get to connect with my folks until I became a, you know, mature kind of adult and actually had like intellectual conversation with, which I very much cherish, just kind of just talking to my dad and my mom rationally. But I, you know, I give him a lot of benefit of the doubt. Like, I get it, you know, you have to raise a bunch of kids, you know, some of them had issues that I don't want to get into, but it was a whole thing. And it takes, you know, that's important over my Boy Scouts shit, you know? But so through all that, I sort of just kind of, you know, was a, not a loner, but I just kind of was much more left to my own devices, you know? Mm, so, mm-hmm. I don't know, it's not horrible, but I think being left alone in your own space, not getting coddled is really, really good. Like when you're, and I'm not comparing myself to Regan, but I think like when you're kind of like doing your own thing and you're not, you know, allowed to like participate in conversations, you get a little bit of observant and insightful, and you can kind of be like, oh, okay, I think I know what you're about. And you know, when I was younger, I was kind of a precocious youngster. Like, I wasn't necessarily, like, I thought a lot of the stuff teachers were doing were bullshit, and I didn't really, like, follow it. It was, like, a whole thing. I didn't, you know, I was like, that's a stupid rule. I'm not going to do that and all that shit.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, I don't know.
Because you were left to your own devices, so you had your own opinions.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're saying it's more of a, it could be a superpower depending on how what the story that you tell yourself
exactly
about it.
And I, you know, my grew up in a very pragmatic household, and my parents, they knew this whole thing about they don't want to make you, they're like, don't make yourself a victim, you know, like, don't victimize yourself. That's how I was raised. Like, don't fucking, you know, not, it wasn't quite like a pull yourself up from your bootstraps thing, but it was more so like a, we're giving you, like, I never, I grew up with the resources to be a good person, you know what I mean? And I very much appreciate
like
that.
Like, it's up to you now to be good or bad.
Yeah, they, so yes.
Like, we're going to give you a roof over your head and food.
Exactly.
And yeah. So don't and, be a piece of shit.
And they, you know, put that's me in school and they helped me. I'm, you know, I'm paying for Rutgers and they're helping me out a lot. Like, they get, you know, I can't afford to do everything. And they really, you know, they provide for me for a good amount of it. And, you know, I don't know. I just think it wasn't perfect, but I can't knock them. They're good folks. Like, they're good people.
No, I'm just like, and look, and I'm not...
I don't know why I'm such a sad sack. It's a chemical thing.
Buddy.
But it's...
Buddy, I've gone to therapy, too. I was telling you, I took my dad to therapy. I did therapy in New Orleans, blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot of therapy. I'm not into it, but I go, at a certain point, there's a problem. And it's also... But also, it's good that you go for... Like, I've met people, you know... who are pieces of shit and they don't seek treatment.
No, definitely, man.
And it's like, yo, you're a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Like, if you sought treatment, that would be like you would admit that there's a problem.
Yeah.
So if you never admit there's a problem, it's not that there's no problem, it's that you haven't admitted it, right?
Yeah.
And so if you're saying, like, there's a little bit of a problem here, let me tune this up, you know, I think that's good. Because also it's like, you know, and, you know, from... It might be also college is tough too because your life is very scheduled. It's very there's a lot of pressure on you to make good grades, right? So there's that too, and you have less freedom, more homework.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's a lot of work, you know, and just that. Like if you get in a different circumstance where you're you know working and making your own money, maybe then you're like, oh, okay, you know what? Instead of seeing a therapist, like every time I have a meeting with my boss Ted, like. I feel fucking great. Like, there's something about that relationship with that homie that's actually, like, you know, keeping me straight. And it's like the feeling I got with this therapist. You know what I'm saying? Like, your life circumstances change.
Absolutely. I mentioned this to you, but when I first started out in comedy, I was in between therapists, in a way. So when I first started comedy, I could show you tapes, my 5 minutes... I used to have 5 minutes just about depression, and it was okay. Like, it did... certain rooms it killed in, like, you know, younger, like, liberal, millennial rooms where they can relate to how shitty their lives are or whatever. I don't know.
Hey, who's got this clip-ring depression?
Yeah.
When I was doing stand-up in Los Angeles, that was 40% of the comics.
Exactly. And so what happened was I was at a party at Rutgers, and I'm talking to this kid, and never met him before. First thing he says to me was something like that I opened with. And I was like, okay, I'm going to not associate with you, and I'm going to go reevaluate how much of a hack I am. Goodbye. And then...
That's good.
Yeah, and then I just started to, you know, write jokes that are outside of my, you know, box, like an absurd perspective.
Yeah, you said something interesting to me at Old Glory, too. You were going, I don't want to... I started to feel worse about my depression presenting it on stage and trying to get adulation for it, for my depression... was actually like I was in this fucking feedback loop of just like to being depressed, talking about my depression, being like, don't you guys like my depression?
Yeah.
And it's just like...
just putting it on a shitty plate. Oh, like, my look God. At me. It's fucking awful. And I found... no, really. So I thought that would be cathartic for me, but really what's cathartic is getting professional help and writing good jokes or, you know, writing solid material that's... representative of what you actually want to talk about, you know?
My thing is, like, don't permeate your suffering onto more people.
Yeah, that's selfish.
Make them happy with laughter.
And that's
is actually what the job is.
And I think I might have mentioned this, like, 100 times in the past hour. But you're, you know, for comedians, you don't... the bottom line shouldn't be making a point or, you know, learning, teaching people stuff the bottom line should be entertaining and making funny jokes.
Yeah.
And that's what I wasn't doing, and that's what I'm starting to do a little bit now. And I hope to keep on doing it.
His name is Colin Armstrong, like Lance Armstrong.
You know it.
Colin Armstrong. This has been episode 223, I believe, of the Highway Diary Podcast. Thanks to my guest.
Hey, we're both clapping. This is fun, man.
Thanks for being on my podcast, bro. Hey.
All right.
Later, motherfuckers.
Bye.